Chapter 39. "I want you to stab me," Gavin said. He and the Malagos boy, Antonius, were standing on deck in the early morning light.
"Your pardon?"
"I've been stabbed by it before, maybe twice."
"Where?"
Antonius asked. "Off Garriston and off Rue. See, it's even been on boats both times."
"I meant on your body."
"Oh, in the back, here. And straight through my chest, here." They were still short on clothing, so like the rest of the former slaves, Gavin went shirtless. It had scandalized the young lord who had offered his own garments, but Gavin couldn't accept them, for reasons he couldn't have said. Regardless, it meant that when he gestured to where he'd been attacked, he was gesturing to skin. Antonius leaned close.
"No scars?
No scars?" "I think that's part of the magic." "Well, it has to be." Antonius hefted the sword and stabbed it down on the deck. Its point sank deeply into the polished, fire-hardened wood. He looked at Gavin skeptically. "I think it's different. For me," Gavin said. He'd been doing a lot of thinking in the last day of freedom. First, he thought of Caris. Caris. It had been so painful to think about when he was in the hell below decks. He could see her smile, the arch of her neck, her hair, blonde now, and her tears of joy as they embraced once more. He could feel her fingers touching his face while he slept, assuring herself he was real. He could imagine nipping her fingers to startle her and laughing together. He imagined her slim legs around his hips, her warm embraces. But then that, too, still hurt. His body had been hollowed out like a bowl for sorrows, and imagining pleasure filling it again was torture. He tried to imagine what he would say when he saw his eyes instead. She had married a prism. She had accepted the costs of being married to the most powerful man in the world, but she'd accepted the rewards too. He was that man no more. What he had promised was not what he was going to give her. What would she say to this withered husk? "I am not now that which once I was. What work of noble note might yet be done by me? By this cripple?" That, too, was too cruel to countenance. So he'd thought about the musket sword. It was the black in it that captivated him. It looked like obsidian. But no one could work obsidian into such delicate spirals. The stuff wasn't malleable. Obsidian fractured with hard, sharp edges. During the war, those who could afford obsidian had edged their arrowheads with the stuff as it cut through Luxin better than steel did, but few could afford it. That it interfered with drafting was known, though. Hellstone, drafters called it, thinking it darkness personified, a negation of light and thereby a tool of the enemy. Gavin had his, the real Gavin's, men collect all the weapons lined with hellstone and any gems or decorative pieces, put them in a few crates and had them lost when they got back to Big Jasper. It was war, albeit the end of the war, and things go missing. He'd used that treasure to line the tunnels of Gavin's prison beneath the Chromaria. He was very familiar with obsidian. And this didn't make sense.
"Can we try a little bit at a time, rather than just run you through and hope for the best?" Antonius asked.
"When you put it like that," Gavin said, "that sort of makes sense." Antonius grimaced. He lofted the sword and extended it toward Gavin's chest.
"How about I hold the sword in place, and you can move forward as much as you want, and maybe the crew won't keelhaul me for killing you?"
"Fair." Gavin held the tip of the white and black sword to his chest. He leaned in and jumped back, cursing, blood dribbling down his chest. Antonius jumped back too, eyes wide. There was a moment of silence while Gavin rubbed at the wound.
"So that wasn't how it worked before?" Antonius asked.
Gavin cursed louder, swore at the heavens. There was no way he'd been imagining it. At least not the second time. The dagger had been a dagger when he'd fought his father and Grinwoody and Kip for it, and a sword thereafter. Gunner had admitted that he'd pulled it out of Gavin's chest, that Gavin had been fully impaled. Maybe it only worked once. It took all your magic and then it was done. But obsidian didn't do that. It could drain Luxin from your blood, sure, but it didn't stop you from ever drafting again. Not even all obsidian did that.
"Can I try it on you?" Gavin asked.
"You said it took away your ability to draft," Antonius said.
It wasn't as if Gavin had wanted to tell him, but there hadn't been any way to avoid it either. The boy had asked him to draft some repair to the galley, and Gavin had no lie ready for why he wouldn't.
"That's right," Gavin said.
"It's a guess, of course, but the events correlate."
"So you want me to give up my ability to do magic to satisfy your curiosity?"
Antonius asked.
"Don't get me wrong. I want to help, but maybe we could wait and try some other way."
Gavin sighed. He couldn't exactly blame the boy. "It's almost first watch. Time's up. We need to decide." Yesterday, in their initial exuberance and fear, they'd simply rowed until dark to get away. None of the slaves had thought to use sextant and compass to find their position, and it had been overcast. Antonius Malagos said they were between Wrath and the Jaspers, 2 days out from Wrath. The crew gathered on deck. Many of them had slept on deck, not trusting that someone wouldn't come and lock them to an oar once again. In the growing light of the rosy-fingered dawn, they took their places. Antonius spoke first.
"This day, we must decide our destination. We've food and water for what, 5 days? I've heard tales of your rowing prowess, and I'm sure you could reach half the coast of Blood Forest and half the coast again of Hrothgar, but there are only two viable options. We go to Big Jasper, or go to Wrath."
"Why would we go to Wrath?" someone asked.
"You left out the third option," someone else said. "We can keep pirating. Sunday's coming. All sort of fat fish in the water for us to take." "Listen to me," Antonius said.
He was too fearful, too young. He thought he was losing the sailors' attention. He wasn't. They simply wanted to taste their freedom a bit. What could make a man feel more like a free man than interrupting his betters without consequence? For men who'd lived under the lash, it was fine wine.
"I'm offering you freedom, and more," Antonius said. "My cousin, Lady Irene Malagos, is fair and rich and connected. If you land in the wrong city, you'll be seen as fugitive slaves, game for anyone to recapture. You land somewhere worse, and you're mutineers. You could be hanged or hauled. My cousin will give you papers filed in every capital. Freedom! Never having to run again. It goes without saying that we split the cargo. Even shares for everyone. No share for me, though I rescued you. All that, and 50 dinars each."
"We want to keep the ship, too," someone shouted out.
"The bitter cob will be sold and the profit divided up with the rest of the shares," Antonius said. "That's the only way everyone gets an even split. If some of you want to go in together and buy it, that's your business."
Gavin stood up. "Lord Antonius," he said, inclining his head, "I want you to know how much we all appreciate you and your actions. We'll make sure you're amply rewarded. However, I'm not really sure why you're even trying. We're going to Big Jasper, because whatever you offer, I'll double." The men cheered. But Antonius held up his hand, silent, waiting. Someone shouted,
"Shut your yaps, you rabble! Let the Lord drive the price up!"
The men laughed, but eventually quieted.
"Two things," Antonius said. "One that you know, and one that you can't. First, you all know Irene Malagos's reputation. She is a tough trader, but she always keeps her word no matter what. Second, in normal times, Gavin Gile could indeed double whatever she and I could offer you. In normal times, I know Gavin Gile would honour his promise to us, and we all know that the Giles have earned their surname anew 1,000 times each generation."
That was a bit too complicated a construction for the sailors. These were simple men. But Gavin didn't interrupt. Let the boy play his gambit. Gavin was ascendant once more. This was his game. He wasn't going to have a crew he'd served with for months be taken out from under him. He wouldn't allow it. He saw Orholm staring at him, his prophet eyes intent.
"But these are not normal times. As I heard from you all last night, Luxlord Andros Gile stabbed his own son and threw him overboard." He paused. "I tell you now that the Luxlord has not been idle since his son has been gone."
Men were looking at Gavin, and he felt dread rising in him.
"Andros Gile has been named Promarchos," Antonius said. "And he has consolidated power in a way that even Gavin Gile couldn't do during the False Prism's War. He doesn't want the enemy son he thought he murdered to come back. For your own sakes and for Gavin's, the last place you want to go is Big Jasper."
It took Gavin's breath. In that moment, he knew it was true. And too late he realized that they had only Antonius's word on this. But these sailors, not schooled in oratory, many of them unable even to read, were able to read a face. Gavin's undisguised dread was a confirmation of everything Antonius said.
"But Gavin is the prism. That's got to count for—"
"Is he?"
Antonius said.
"I know you believe he is. I believe he is, too. But if he came into Big Jasper and his father's men seized him and he shouted, 'I am the prism,' would they not say, 'Then draft, prism. Save yourself. Prove yourself'? He can't draft. He can't prove who he is. Gavin is our friend and our prism. I believe it. But now, in wanting to go home, he is like a drunk friend who wants to swim across the sea. It is not a good friend who encourages that drunk to swim. Prove your friendship to Gavin and your devotion to your prism by not letting him throw his life away."
Gavin had no answer, no counter. His golden tongue was too heavy to make words. He hadn't thought it through, had been too busy thinking about the wrong things. He'd been outmaneuvered by a boy. He was slipping. He was lost.
"Tell me," Antonius said, "what happens to the simple sailor who comes between two warring giants? I tell you what doesn't happen. A simple sailor doesn't get paid double. He doesn't get rewarded. He gets killed outright. So tell me, who wants to head to Wrath?"